As in, no. No. Good question, but no.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Pod questions. All good?
I'm all good. You good?
Yes. I'm going to scroll back and see
what nonsense there is over the last 7 days on Slack.
Yes. Okay. Carl Miller. When seeing Mount free kick goal at the weekend, it had me thinking how many goals Bale scored in the same way, especially in the Euros run, which cemented him as a Wales legend. Who are your favourite all-time set piece takers for your club?
Gareth. Paul Gascoigne. Original OG.
Was he good?
That was a Paul from free kicks. Class, mate.
Ratio? Decent.
Oh, wouldn't know, mate. But yeah, decent. I remember in 1991, my first year going, we played Derby County, like game 5, I want to say. He got a hat-trick against Derby. He scored 2 free kicks from about 30 yards. The first one, he bent over the near side and Peter Shilton was flapping, ended up running nearly through the net to try and get there, couldn't get there. The second one, he went the other way. Shilton just stood there and looked at it. Top bin. Class. Gazza, I think, yeah.
I'd have to go... it's different for penalties
Piatt.
And free kicks.
Piatt for you, no?
Free kicks, Piatt all day long. Penalties, Dix all day long. Because Dix was also my favourite player when I was growing up, and he used to just smash it down the middle. So penalties, I'd take Julian Dix all day long. But free kicks, and the thing is, Piatt didn't score that many for us because he wasn't with us that long, maybe 10. 8-10, something like that. But every single one, the up and down that he used to be able to get was ridiculous.
Ericsson first few years for us as well, and then tailed off badly.
Java, a question related to this week's Clash of the Correspondents, and he means last week's, James, with Bibby and that.
Oh, no.
Are some of Simon's views on the league difficulty and Newcastle's stature a bit premature? Agreed that they have strengthened the team well and are performing much better and will continue to strengthen, but this league can be brutal. I'm certainly finding as a West Ham fan that we have had two very strong seasons, but it's not as straightforward this year. But it's so, like, a couple of things drop differently. Like, say we'd beaten Forest and drew at Chelsea, suddenly we'd be very different mindset because we'd be with the Fulhams and on points and that kind of thing. So...
Yeah, but then from Newcastle's perspective,
they didn't drop points
at home to Bournemouth and stuff. They'd be like second maybe at the moment.
I think this year is just ridiculously tight in the table and it will sort itself out post-World Cup.
Are they premature? I mean, it's one for Si to answer and I suppose we can't really answer that till the end of the season, but I think he's probably, I imagine... and probably even feel stronger after yesterday's result, probably a little bit surprised at how quickly just a pure change of manager has taken Newcastle from relegation candidates to a team that's genuinely, at this moment, in contention for a top four position. They're fourth in the league and they're there on merit at the moment. Yes, they've added players, of course they have, but they haven't gone mental yet. Not to the extent I think anybody would have thought that Newcastle would be fourth at the minute. Let's put it that way.
Java, what's the most horrendous colour combination that you've seen on an away or third football kit?
Off the top of my head, yikes. Certain colours that just shouldn't...
Do you know what I think has never really worked on a football kit? I think Everton's away kit this year is pink, isn't it?
Not big on pink, no.
I've never seen a pink football kit and thought you've pulled this off well. I've never seen one that I thought actually that's an all right shirt. And I'm not against
pink.
I
think there's some Everton fans will debate that. All our Palermo listeners will debate that as well.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's horses for courses, right? Everyone's got like such, you can hear such polarised views on football kits. Like, I love our third kit this season. I know there's people that don't like it completely. But I've never seen a pink one and thought, you know what? Even pastel pink or bright pink, I've never seen one and thought, you know what? This is good. But there's not one that stands out to me as a third kit or away kit that I'm like, this is rubbish.
There's certain colours that shouldn't go, I don't know, like greens and reds.
But to be honest, I saw when we had this picture, what's your team's least favourite kit ever? Someone tagged in Newcastle when they had a yellow and white one. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yellow and white stripes, yeah.
That was horrible. That was fucking lemon mousse, if ever I've seen one.
And mine's gone into complete blank mode, actually. People used to be dead against greens, and you get almost anyone to wear a green now, or a black was an anomaly when the Premier League started, I think. Almost everybody's had a black kit at some stage now, I think. I feel like United might have been the first, maybe, to have like kind of an all-black kit. There's certain colours just don't feel like they work. Obviously, like Tottenham's last year was an abomination. But then our blue kit this year is awful as well. Even more so for turning up in it at Old Trafford last week.
Prabesh asked the question that we're not going to get into, James, but he was asking about the price of football because he heard your ticket was only 30 quid. But
every time I post a ticket, away someone responds and says...
It has a cap.
My dad's ticket at Old Trafford was £15. Nice. As an over 65. Away Premier League tickets are capped at £30. Our ticket at Marseille in the Champions League, I think it's £62.50, I want to say, Suj. Which is why people weren't just buying the ticket for the loyalty points this time. Oh, that's a little bit too much. The loyalty points was a lot less for Marseille. I think that's probably off the back of Tottenham probably charging Marseille fans probably a similar number in the first game, I should imagine. So, yes, away Premier League tickets are capped at £30. I don't foresee that changing either.
John Jacobson, should there be tee-off times for crazy golf? Just experience 60 minutes of it and might start a petition for it to be discussed in the Houses of Parliament. How do these companies get away with it? Utter farce the way they take our money, and there's not an ounce of order within the establishment.
My missus keeps discussing. There's a crazy golf at Trent Park now, aren't there?
Yeah, there's been for a while.
Which isn't far from us. Have you been?
Yeah, a long time ago, though.
Good?
Yeah, it's all right.
My missus keeps talking about taking Harry there. I said, stop bullshitting. You want to go.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to go. Not
crazy
take your son.
I'm not a golf fan, to be honest with you. It's just long. Like John said, it's a bit long to get around. And other people just... No order. Sam O'Sullivan, why is there no consideration made for midweek Premier League games? West Ham going to Liverpool, Tottenham going to United, and City scheduled to go to Arsenal are not helpful to fans. Should midweek games be kept more local?
That's really...
As they are in lower leagues, I should add.
Really, really interesting question. If you're going to, like I did, went to Manchester last Wednesday night, unless you do the coach back and are happy to get back to Tottenham at 3-4 o'clock in the morning or whatever, then you've got to stay over. But that's not the case for many Sunday 4:30 p.m. games you can't get back from. Many Saturday 5:30 games you can't get back from. So I'm not sure it makes that much of a difference. I think there are certain ones like, should Newcastle be going to Bournemouth for a midweek game? No. But when they do, it'll probably get moved to a Monday night or something anyway. I don't think it matters that much. I think when you have games in close proximity, perhaps that's what part of the question is to reference to. But that said, the players, if you take Tottenham as an example going to Manchester, the players would have flown. So I don't really think it makes that much difference where we play.
Okay.
Is the honest answer. Is it ideal to get on a plane? Probably not. But actually, modern day now, okay, let's say it's 45, 50 minutes to Manchester, I'm guessing, which of half of it's just going up and coming back down. Is it that much difference to flying to Marseille's probably, I don't know, 2 hours maybe. Yeah. Does it matter that much? I don't think it matters so much for the players. Yes, it matters obviously for the fans and stuff.
Lewis James says, who came off worse out of Eric Dier and the ball? And this is last Wednesday. Did he get smack in the face, did he?
Oh my God, he took one so bad, yeah.
Ouch.
Fair game to him. He was bad again yesterday, Eric. I don't know what's happened.
Arthur Jones, as a Man United fan that lives abroad and hasn't been able to get to Old Trafford for a few years, I would be interested in James's thoughts on the stadium. Is it as shit as people think?
No, in my opinion. I think some of it looks quite dated in the stadium now. So I did a little piece for the advanced tiers on it on Friday or Thursday, one or the other, I can't remember. There's not a lot of leg room. So when Kane did nearly score in the second half, we had a shot that went wide. That's an instant shin bruise, no doubt about it. There was only one real concession place to get alcohol. So you can imagine what it's like, particularly in a away end, right? I said to Dad, do you want a beer half hour before kickoff? Looked down and went, yeah, forget that. Probably get it by half time. So there's things United are missing out on, I think. Did I see things like rats or leaking roof stadiums or anything like that? No. Is it aesthetically pleasing in the way it might have been when I was a kid? No. I think the way they've built the roof in hindsight is a bad mistake because it comes down rather than goes out straight. It comes down. So there must be sight lines near the back where you can only see the pitch, like you can't see the rest of the stands. And I think part of the experience of going to Old Trafford would be that you can see the place. Even if you go right down to the front row of the away section, which is behind where the disabled section is, you can just about make out that there is an extra tier on the Sir Alex Ferguson stand. They cannot see much more than the touchline on the other side of the pitch, surely. Which I think must be a terrible viewing experience to not be able to see much more than the actual pitch. So I think there are things that aesthetically aren't as pleasing but didn't matter as much when the thing was built. I think outside the ground it still holds a special aura about it. You absolutely know when you get there. And I think I was extremely impressed with the Munich Tunnel Club area. I didn't even know it existed, to tell you the truth, and I thought that was really nice.
Alan Seabright, I know a lot of my fellow Saints fans want him out, and I'm tending in that direction too, but do you agree with the Saints fans singing "You're Getting Sacked in the Morning" to Hasan Hüttl when we're winning 1-0 away at Bournemouth? No.
I'm not aware if that happened, but I can only presume that is what happened. Seems somewhat strange, though, as the game was being won from very early on. Are we sure that wasn't aimed at Gary O'Neill?
They would know if it was the Saints fans or the Bournemouth fans. Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know why you'd do that if you were winning, unless it was like right at the start of the game. And I don't think away fans go with that attitude away from it. So it's very, very strange. So to answer the question, if that happened, no, I don't agree with it.
Bradley, what's more chaotic, Wolves or the Tory party?
The Tory party.
Yeah, I think the Tory party. Danielle, after my question about Bruno Fernandes and his regression on last week's pod, his man of the match performance against Spurs, I'm available to comment on any patrons, team players if they need a change of form.
Yeah, I seem to remember saying chill out on Bruno in response to that question, like give it a bit of time and let's see.
Addy, he
was good again on Saturday, I thought. Yeah.
Addy says, do you reckon you would survive longer as Watford manager or UK Prime Minister? I'd say UK Prime Minister would be fine. But I can't run for it because of how much shit we chat in this pod.
Despite my football knowledge, I imagine I'd probably make a better Prime Minister than Watford manager, would be my best guess.
Jordan,
such definitely would.
Prime Minister all the way day long. All I'm saying is before this season started, I swear I asked on a Q&A, could Salah be the next in line to turn to shit after a new mega contract? And here we are, as requested.
Oh,
Curse of the contract.
I did say, ask the question again. Yeah, that's fair enough. The thing is, when it's going wrong, it's easy to have the question marks. I think we asked questions even in the summer about potential mental fatigue for Liverpool off the back of being in contention for a quadruple, ending up with two trophies, absolutely brilliant, but actually the two biggest ones obviously slipped them just by. And then it actually feeling a little bit flat when you think that ultimately they were a win at the Etihad and a Champions League final victory away from essentially completing football. to come back from that mentally can be quite challenging. I wonder if, yes, maybe there's a, I'm probably looking at City with Haaland, becomes a deflating, like, we got to go with them again. Like, it's just with City. City and Liverpool have both been relentless with each other. But actually, other than obviously the season where Liverpool won it and City were obviously well adrift, City have edged the relentless Premier League battles, right? When they've been really close to each other each time City has won it. That's happened 3 times now. So that's probably hard mentally to keep going again. And I think Liverpool are in a cycle where they're obviously trying to integrate younger players like Elliot Carvalho into the team. You can even say bringing in people like Luis Diaz, Jota, Nunes. There's an evolution happening, which needs to happen to make sure that it doesn't stay stale. For people like Salah and Van Dijk, who knows what their motivation is. I don't ever look at those players and think you don't give a shit. I think with Mo, a little bit like with Sonny, it can appear that way sometimes. I think the fact that the league is, and again, there was a game yesterday I was obviously at where there's definitely incidents in the game, and I'm not referring to the Wilson goal. There's incidents in the game where I think in other, they're common practice fouls both ways, and they're not being given. It wasn't as extreme in the Tottenham game as it was in, say, the Liverpool-Man City game. And I don't think that's helping players like Sonny and Salah, who are just not as physically equipped as other people. There's also, interestingly, as a wider conversation, there is a lot of speculation at the moment that Liverpool, Tottenham, and a couple of others are intentionally not putting in 100% at the moment. And what I mean by that is it's not a, please don't misunderstand that. That's coming from the coaching and the training, that they're intentionally being tailored to not be at their maximum at the moment because they're being tailored to hit their maximum on the other side, like in March, April. Whether that's something with Tottenham, Liverpool, and potentially a couple of others that could be true or not, I don't think we find out until probably the end of the season, till June, and we truly know. But there is a thought growing that, particularly with Liverpool more than anybody, that he's trying, and partially because of injuries, trying to manage the workload so that they hit their peak when they need to most, rather than burn out hard because of the World Cup and the long season and the close proximity of these Champions League games at the moment. So that's a theory that's going around on a few teams. It is being mentioned with Tottenham as well. To be honest, it was being mentioned around Tottenham months ago that Conte wasn't pushing them as hard as he normally does in training and stuff, and won't until after the World Cup. I don't think there's a way of knowing if this is going to be true or not till we hit the other side. And I mean the other side of the season.
Jarvo, as if by magic, Trossard scores when Sudge sells him. James, who is your FPL troll?
Ooh, good question.
Havertz?
Havertz is a decent... Zaha? It has been Zaha, I think. Okay. But I took a hit for the guy last week, and he's got me 8 points, and I've thrown him straight out, and he's returned one. So, yeah, I mean, I'll take that. It's okay. It's not Zaha. I think Mo's one for me.
Okay.
I've never been as successful with it as others. I think Tottenham defenders at the moment fall into there. Could arguably Harry Kane. I feel like if I get him in at the moment, it's going to destroy him. There's a number. Phil Foden might be another one. We look at this in a couple of weeks, and because this has happened before. I've gone with him, and he just don't get the minutes.
Dan L, who do you think is the best player to manage your teams? I'm guessing for Spurs, it's between like Ardiles and Hoddle, maybe.
Oh, I see. I understand. Yeah, got to be them.
I'd say
Hoddle over Ardiles. I mean, you particularly could probably put a pretty good 11 out, I'm guessing, off the top of my head.
I'd go Zola, though. If I had to pick one manager as a player, Zola.
Not Avram Grant?
Nah.
Yeah, I think Zola's a very fair shout.
I remember
shout,
watching some video of...
we'd Mark. Be all right. We could have a goalie. We got Nuno and Jose when putting goal.
When Mark Noble did did the interview with Rio Ferdinand on Rio Ferdinand's channel, and he was like, there was a season when we had Scott Parker and Mark Noble, and Zola was manager, and we were fucked for players, and they were like, but every time in training they were like,
play,
get your fucking contract, because he was still the best player on the training pitch. And you can imagine that with the likes of Zola that he was. So I'm going to say him over Manuel Pellegrini. Dan L, otherwise second actually would be Billy Bonds. Dan L, can DCL still make it on the plane to Qatar and a place in the England squad, and is he a good move to make from Mitrovic in 15?
Let's see how he does fitness-wise at the weekend. I think it's puntable, and it's more puntable because it's only two games again, and you know that you've been in it. You don't have to sell him on. You automatically probably sell him on. So, yeah, we're at short-term punts. Sean's coming back on the pod next week before the Leicester games. We'll talk about it again. I think both those teams can obviously be looked at as potential two games punts, Everton and Leicester. Could he still be on the plane? Yes. I guess that depends on, obviously, A, his fitness. B, depends on, and we don't really know the answer to this, what Southgate's true opinions are, not only on Ivan Toney, but also on Tammy Abraham. I mean, we really know what Gareth Southgate truly thinks of Tammy Abraham. I would be surprised if Calvert-Lewin was on the plane, but I don't think it's impossible. The other thing is, he doesn't need to, it's not like he's a midfield player and needs to be at a certain requirement of fitness.
Yep.
Because he's, in reality, he may be used for a third group stage game that arguably might not matter if we do well in the first two. Or otherwise, the only way he's seeing the pitch is if Harry gets injured. And in which case, even still, it's not impossible we'd go, I'll play Sterling, Foden, Saka as a front three, for example. So it's the one position where you could definitely get away more with taking someone who you just want to use as a target man late in a game and the fitness doesn't matter so much. And arguably, if you're going to throw crosses into the box of Calvert-Lewin, Toney and Abraham, who would I most want on the end of it? You know, I'd put Dom right in amongst that. Toney would go for me though,
yep,
personally.
Chris Jago lives in South Africa. He wants to do a game of buy, sell, keep, avoid. Sunak, Truss, Boris Johnson, Starmer. I'm happy to buy Sunak, sell, Truss. He said keep Boris and avoid Starmer, but I'd switch those around. Avoid Boris. Don't mind Keir Starmer just sticking around.
He's been on a wind-up this week, hasn't he?
Keir Starmer?
No, Boris.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he'll be running again. Whitebeard, this is a simple one for me, but I'll ask you, James. Do you think Kane outscored Son in FPL over the next 3 weeks? I'm going to say yes, just on form at the moment.
Yeah.
You'd have to.
But, for a big caveat on that, that I think all three fixtures are potentially good for Sonny, including the Liverpool game. I wouldn't be surprised if Sonny hauled against Liverpool. If we can suck them in right. This is the thing about how we play. It's absolutely the best way to play against Liverpool.
David Hunter, what is this question? Have you ever considered sitting on the toilet the opposite way, enabling you to use the cistern for admin? As in, no. Good question, but no.
Have you ever sat on a toilet with a laptop on your lap?
No.
Never.
And not the opposite direction.
I don't fucking care. Yeah, I have.
It's mad. JC.
But never thought about doing it the other way.
Nah. Following on from, also my toilets at home don't have a cistern. They're kind of built in the wall. So
I don't. I wouldn't be able to do it in my house either, but I know what the reference is to.
Correct. JC, following on from the great question above, first wee of the morning, sit down or stand up. I'm a full-time member of the sit-down club. Boring FPL one. Is the Almiron hype now real or is he a viable option? Yes for Almiron. Sit down, stand up.
Never sat down just for a wee ever. Sorry.
I couldn't say I'm either or. Both, probably.
What? So when you wake up in the morning, you go for a wee, do you sit down or do you stand up?
Yeah, but I'm half asleep in the morning, so I just, like, I'm zombied. I don't wake up and I'm wide awake. But I'll go straight to the shower first thing. So I'll have a wee and go straight to the shower.
So you piss in the shower?
No, I have a piss first. But I'll happily sit down, but I'll happily stand up. I don't think I have ever noticed.
Hold on. You must know. You wake up in the morning, you go, I'm going to piss.
Both. The answer's both. Like, either
but
or.
What makes you decide?
How groggy I am.
It's not like people say, oh, are you lucky in terms of do you put your right sock on first or your left sock?
No.
Like, generally, no, I wouldn't think about that.
I think
sort
if
of
I'm
thing.
Like half asleep, I'll happily sit down, I'll happily stand up. Like, I don't think I have a either or.
What about wiping your bum? Is that a stand up or a sit down?
Either or as well.
Really?
I don't think
what's
I have.
What's going
preference.
On?
I'll happily do it sitting down or standing what? Up.
My wife stands up. I don't understand it.
Yeah, you can stand up.
I don't get it. Fair I really play. Don't get it.
Harbour right. Boy, if you had to wear a hoodie in public with a big picture of someone's face on it, anyone's face, who would you choose?
Oh, God.
Biggie Smalls. Because I've got a Christmas jumper with Biggie Smalls on it, so that'll do.
Oh, I go for Dwayne, the Rock.
Okay.
Yeah, that's got to work for loads of ways. Right, you ain't fucking with me. Right, I'm pretty boy. It's got to be loads of positives for having the Rock, I think.
Dan L, is Jesse Marsh in trouble? I know we were saying this a few weeks ago with Rodgers. Forrest has kept the faith in Cooper. Which way do you think it will go with Leeds? I think...
Well, if they lose at Liverpool and if they lose at home to Bournemouth, he won't manage the Tottenham game. Like, it'll just go fine. We'll have a caretaker for Tottenham because he's got to go because it's so bad. And then you got an extra week to get someone in terms of your planning ahead of the World Cup and stuff. So, yeah, if he loses at Liverpool and he loses at home to Bournemouth, I don't think there's a... Same as what we said earlier. I wouldn't be shocked if he's sad. I don't think it's necessarily right because I still think, and it's a hangover of... Bielsa. I think they bought quite well in the summer. I think like the likes of Aronson, I think Rocker, I think particularly Adams, I think they're decent players, but you also took Phillips and Rafinha out of that, who were so important for them. And I just think they are still stuck with a lot of players that aren't Premier League level. And I don't know if someone else comes in and fixes that. Marsh has a clear idea. You might not agree with it, but he definitely has ideas about what he wants to do. And I don't know if ripping that up is necessarily going to be the right thing again.
Excuse me.
But you can't take... I mean, 2 points from 9 is unacceptable. That can't be 2 points from 11 that then includes defeats at home to two promoted sides successfully. Or in succession, rather.
Rob Pick, if a tree fell in the woods... Would the analytics loyalists and the non-analytics crew still be arguing and driving me to the point where I no longer want to interact on FPL Twitter? God. Was there a big argument? Was there a weekend? I don't even log in.
Honestly, this is, unfortunately, it's a Twitter problem. And, you know, if you're ITest or your analytics or you're somewhere in the middle or you're neither or whatever, like, please don't take offence in what I'm saying because it's like both sides of the argument. It's just... There's people on Twitter who, unfortunately, have to get a word in. But people say to me, well, you tweeted, you must want responses. No, not really. Like, you can respond to my tweet. I'm sharing how I feel. That's it. You can respond. Doesn't mean I necessarily want to have a conversation with you. And unfortunately, the thing with the Bird app is, because it's all the written word, I think it is in our nature quite a lot to pick out the negative. You know, if someone says a positive and a negative, it's easy to pick out the negative. But there is a group of people from all walks of what they eye test, analytics, whatever, who just have to get involved in conversations at the moment. And it feels like it has to be an argument. And I'm tired of seeing it. It's nearly every single day. And there's not a right or wrong on either side. It's just people who basically don't want to be told that their opinions... Yet some people who want to tell other people that their opinion is wrong, and those same people don't want to be told that their opinion is wrong. Does that make sense?
Correct.
And it's just... It's boring. It's boring. People don't have to get involved in everybody's conversation. It's like, I give an example, and I understand it a little bit. So I tweeted yesterday, right, about the transformation that Eddie Howe's done. This is off topic a little bit, but it's an example of Twitter. Eddie Howe's done a great job at Newcastle. Great result. We're in the top four. Deserve it, right? First response he gets is some guy who says to us, yeah, but you're run by murderers. Okay? It's partly fair. But I also don't think that Si has to tweet that every fucking time that they win a game of football. It's like, leave it out. Leave it. You know, do Newcastle fans have to feel like that every single time? And it's a bit like this as well. So if someone makes a reference about something they've seen with their eyes, and then someone has to come in with a, yeah, but well, why are you getting involved? And it goes the other way as well. So there's a lot at the moment saying, and I don't know what the fucking models were or weren't for the weekend, but I think we could all say, and it's easy to do the hindsight, Haaland Salah was quite close in terms of the decision. Now, a lot of people say we shouldn't take the risk. That's fine. That's your opinion. But Haaland Salah, on the face of it, going into the weekend was quite a close decision. For me and you, it didn't feel like much of a decision because it didn't feel worth the risk. But actually, if their ownership had been exactly the same, and you can bring form into it and stuff as well. Haaland at home to Brighton, Salah at home to Forest. Really, on the face of it, it was a close call. This weekend, Salah at home to Leeds and Haaland going to Leicester is also a close call. But you're getting all these as well. So I'm presuming some of the models possibly may have favoured Salah at the weekend. Fine. So you get these hindsight merchants coming out going, ah, your model said Salah was best. You don't have to follow the model, right? But I don't know why these people have to be involved and come to these people. And it's all so much of it is always hindsight stuff. It also goes the other way where it feels like people can't be critical of these models in their own views. So it's just nonsense. I get what Rob said. Luke's FPOI and sent a tweet this morning, and I wanted to comment on it, and I didn't because I think people are going to come and comment to me, and I can't be bothered with people. But Luke said, can we start using the hashtag argument? Because all the conversations between analytics and grass or whatever people want to call it, it's just going into an argument. Almost every single one. And there's a lot of people on the timeline I'm just really fucking bored with. And I just wouldn't engage in a conversation with them. And you're probably bored listening to me talking about this, aren't you, Serge? Yeah, exactly.
I'm not bothered about it.
Exactly.
There's easy ways to just avoid Twitter as much as possible. Darren also are close. He's thinking of buying Fabianski in Sky today. Do you reckon there's any clean sheet for West Ham from now until the World Cup? Yes. I prefer Bowen, but it would be in place of Jesus, Kane or Salah, which I don't overly like, as I just want to reverse that straight away. So yeah, if your alternative is that, I'd go Fabianski over getting Bowen for like Salah, Kane or Jesus.
Fancy clean sheet tonight?
Yeah, it's possible. I'd say it's a like 55% chance.
I think I'd gamble and sell Jesus personally.
I don't mind that as well because he's on four yellows as well. That's the other thing.
I say that with, I captained Saliba yesterday in Sky, actually. And I think I will again on Sunday.
Spurs fullbacks, Bournemouth, you think Doherty and Sessegnon?
I mean, I would like it to be Spence. I just passed looking at the other two to tell you the truth. Yes, I think Doherty is, because I really think Emerson will play in the Champions League. I'm not sure which other one. If Sessegnon plays in the Champions League, it'll be Perisic at Bournemouth. But I think it might be Perisic against Lisbon. That said, it feels more of a not-lose game again. And I think there is a case to say as well that Bournemouth will feel like a narrower game of football. And you can probably get away with Perisic and Doherty defensively more in that sort of fixture, you would think. So I think, yes, Doherty at Bournemouth, left side, not so sure.
Tim, how do you stop players from time-wasting? Would a system like rugby stop players from time-wasting with the clock stopped or not? Or maybe the ref stoppage time watch linked to screens in the ground so you can see?
I think it comes down to...
It's probably not as big a problem as you sometimes feel.
No, and I think it always feels worse when it's against your team. So, there was obviously a lot of time-wasting going on from Newcastle yesterday, but I understand it. I've seen my team do it the same the other way around and stuff, and it's part of the game, I think. And it's frustrating when it happens, but if it's not managed by referees, then it just goes on. I think to be honest, the right answer is more additional time. So think, you know, you can be angry about it all game, etc., etc. But if the board goes up at the end yesterday and he's put up like 9 minutes or something, then it those sort of things will change people's mentality. Fucking hell,
add it on.
That's a lot of pressure that I didn't. And because psychology, you think, oh, I've got 4 minutes here. I'm nine. Jesus Christ. So, I mean, I'm not saying he added five yesterday. You know, I'm normally quite a good judge of what I expect it to be. I'm sort of thinking five or six at a time yesterday, and mainly only because of that. So, but I think it's that. It's difficult because what do? Do you book when you've got a team doing it like that? And I hate to single out Newcastle, which is just obviously what I experienced yesterday. But should we be in a position where you've got five or six of their players getting booked yesterday? It doesn't feel quite right. So I think the best way to manage it is, yeah, it's the time at the end. It's the time at the end. We discussed doing the clock thing before, and I don't think that's the solution.
We need to, on Tottenham, talk about the West Ham getting charged against Southampton for the protest. No, when the goal was given, apparently all of our players were out of control. But honestly, when I heard that we were charged by the FA, I was like, are you out of your mind? Like, I didn't see anything bad.
Well, ours might be after Wilson's goal yesterday, because I mean, Bentancur particularly was losing his fucking mind.
Yeah, I mean, they were upset, but I didn't see anyone go crazy at the ref. And after like 20 seconds, Declan Rice was the only one talking to the ref and everyone else had kind of gone away. Don't get me wrong, they were pissed off, but I didn't see anything from it that I hadn't seen in any other game that I thought, wow, deserved to be charged with bringing the game into the
well. Let's see if Tottenham get charged.
Pretty crazy. Amrabat Manjo, picture the scene. You're playing against your arch rivals with fans in the stadium for the first time in 16 years and get battered 4-0. What do you do? Asking for a brick laying friend. Who did Watford beat at the weekend, James?
They beat Luton 4-0 yesterday. Luton are still above them, mind. Yeah, enjoy the win, Joe. Enjoy the win. I've not got a lot to add on to that.
We have a question coming in from James. It's not from yourself. Following on from Gary's question on Twitter, which we didn't answer in the main pod, would you like to see a review system implemented for VAR, similar to tennis and cricket? You know, like three challenges to the ref's decision.
No, I mean, it's like the goal yesterday, Wilson's goal. Like, I have no problem with that. I think it's one of them on the line where, a little bit like Emerson's red card at Arsenal, that if it wasn't given on, if it had been given as a foul on field, I don't think they'd have given a goal afterwards. Like, if Emerson had been booked against Arsenal, it wouldn't have been a red card. So I don't mind that it sticks with the refereeing decision. I thought, by the way, Newcastle should have had a penalty in the first 10 minutes or so for a foul by Emerson on Joel Linton. And I haven't, I've only seen back on the TV what was on Match of the Day last night, and they didn't show it. So I can only assume that perhaps it wasn't and I'd seen it wrong from the stands. But at the time, I was fully expecting a penalty to be given. The less involvement from VAR, the better for me. You know my opinion on it. So, but I don't think in terms of calling reviews is, nah. I think we'd potentially summon the game a bit more.
What's your views on Sven Botman, says Danny, after seeing him live?
Yeah, very good. Still a young player.
Jake, asked that one.
Very, very good. Very 22 good.
22 he is.
Yeah, left-sided, good player. I look at kind of the fact that we brought Longley in, and Longley's done all right, but it wasn't good yesterday. And you think, could Tottenham have pushed the boat out when we knew that Tottenham needed a left-sided centre-back? Now, maybe he might not be so comfortable coming further upfield as the left-sided centre-back with expectation to potentially overlap on occasion. I don't know. But very good. Very good yesterday. Newcastle have, while they keep them fit, that's a very solid back four they've got.
Gary Mantle, what percentage of the tactical side of the game do you think that you understand, and what percentage do you think the average match-going fan understands?
What a question.
50%
can I be honest, 25%. I generally was thinking for myself, yeah, probably about 50%.
Is what you understand?
Yeah.
And the average match-going fan, 20 to 25?
I think that's being very, very kind.
Yeah.
And can we just say
match going fans, those people go to a lot of games, season ticket holders and stuff.
Okay, look, my dad, I'm gonna get, has been to thousands of football matches. His understanding is better than most, primarily because he sits next to me every week. His understanding of the inner workings of tactics is non-existent.
Okay.
He couldn't tell you much further than the formations of the two teams. And that's someone who goes regularly away from homes, has a good high vantage point at home games and stuff. So I would put my dad's knowledge well above the average fan. So how much does the average fan understand about, was the question, the inner workings of tactics or just tactics?
Just tactics.
5%. I think most, yeah, most people can watch football matches and afterwards won't be able to tell you what formation certain teams played.
Yep. Danny W says, are Newcastle quietly putting a top four bid together for this season? And how much is their form down to the cash injection? How much to Eddie Howe? They haven't spent shitloads. I think they spent sensibly. So Eddie Howe deserves a lot of credit, I think.
They obviously have spent good money on Isak, Botman. Pope is just, oh, we almost forget about Pope because it doesn't feel like they spent a huge amount of money on Pope. Gomeris was obviously a big sign in January. Trippier was as well. But they haven't gone mental. The main reason is, yes, Eddie Howe. That said, if you completely strip the new signings out of Newcastle, they would still be a bottom half team. So it's a balance between the two.
Rob Pick has got two questions. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being crazy, how would you rate the idea of Salah and Solanke to Saka and Kane for a minus 4?
Kane and who?
Saka.
We really want to take minus fours to remove Salah before we leave.
I would have given that a 7 or 8 on the crazy scale. Not for me.
Also, yeah, look, Harry's doing really well at the moment. I'm not going to captain Harry.
No.
Consistent as and stuff. But as I said, we're just muddling through. I mean, Bournemouth away this Saturday. Give me a Kane penalty and a 1-0 win now. I'll move on and forget about it. This is just about us getting to the World Cup and realising that England are even worse than Tottenham and then starting again.
If Leeds, this is Rob Pick's second question. If Leeds were to sack Jesse Marsh, of the three Premier League managers sacked this season, excluding Tuchel, so Scott Parker, Bruno Lage and Steven Gerrard, which would be the best replacement for Jesse Marsh?
Wow. Bruno Lage.
Okay.
Don't ask me why. I'm going to say Bruno Lage.
Yeah, I think I agree. Who is this? Dan L. What animal would be the most sarcastic if it could talk?
Giraffe.
Cats. Cats.
Oh, cats are good shout.
I've got no time for cats.
Giraffe. Okay. I can imagine a giraffe would be like, yeah, pass me that. Even though it's got a massive neck. Yeah, pass me that. I can't reach it.
Harry G says, Ericsson looks like he would have been the ideal signing for Spurs this summer.
Yes.
Anyone else you have in mind to see Spurs get a more creative central midfield player?
I feel like it's a balance, right? Because reality is the best setup for Tottenham when everyone's fit is 3-4-3. So, you know, people mention like Madison's, for example. Madison in the system we play now, 3-5-2, could he play as 1-3? Yeah, brilliant. And then you can tuck it in really nicely, a little bit like how we tried to set up at United with Bentancur a little bit higher than the other two. You could do that with Madison. But I think he just needs a better all-round, a next level up in terms of our regular system. And that's, for me, someone who would be attainable at the moment is someone like a Madison teammate, actually, is Yuri Tielemans, who's obviously got a contract situation, knows the league well, looks like over the last few games looks a little bit reinvigorated. I think Tottenham should be asking serious questions in January, because I think it's always looked like it would be Tottenham, Arsenal or Manchester United for Tielemans, and I'm not sure the other two are interested at the moment. So I think Tottenham should be asking questions there. In terms of a more creative player, it's very, very difficult with the system that we play. But someone, yes, of the Madison ilk, if the money's right, could maybe be an option as well. I think we know as well, we have the impression that Leicester are open to selling, right? If the money's good, seems to be the impression we've got. So that may not be the... If they get themselves out of the shit, they may be more open to it. They might not be so open to selling, if, obviously, if they think they're in still in serious danger of going down. But yes, those sort of players. I'm not high on Madison, by the way, as a... Just don't think when everyone's fit and we play 3-4-3, I don't think he's in the team. I wouldn't have him over Kulusevski, personally. So I think it needs to be more of a hybrid. What can you Tielemans is someone I look at and go, could you play for me as a 10? Could you play a higher position? Could you develop and be that? And I think yes. And also I think one of the reasons I really like him as a player is I think he can play 6, 8, or even 10.
Okay.
And I think Tottenham need Ben, you can't play Bentancur or Højbjerg as 10s. Tielemans, you could.
Mm. Well, he's done that for Belgium a little bit, has he?
He's certainly done it for Leicester in certain games where they might have had, say, an Ndidi and a Samari or a Mendy both behind him. I'm pretty sure, yes, he could play higher up. And I wouldn't want him to, but if you're in a trouble moment, you need to link the team a little bit higher up. Yeah, I think he's got the vision as well, top end.
Cool. That, James, is all the questions we've had in on Slack.
Nice.
Listeners, thank you so much. Tomorrow, Champions League, which restarts. We'll see how we're getting on with that. I think you're flying, and I have flown. Like, I think I'm up to like 50K or 20K or something.
You have flown?
Flown up the ranking.
Okay.
You're flying. I've flown up. I don't know if I'm flying necessarily.
Yeah,
still.
I think I'm in a decent position, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll tune into that tomorrow. Tottenham coming at you on Wednesday. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. No, I was going to say, someone asked a question about, can we update UCL? I'm sure someone asked that in the pod questions. I saw it. And can I just answer and say, I haven't had time to even look at it. I wouldn't even know what players I've got in my team at the moment. I just happened to see it this morning. Someone asked, can we have a UCL update?
Danny W, I'm apologising. I missed your question.
That's all right.
What's the UEFA League update, UEFA Champions League update? Sane injured, Barca.
I haven't got a clue. And the honest answer is as well, because I'm recording with Bradley and Tom later for COTC, I might even be delegating some of the research for it. So I can't give you any honest answer. I know it's been mentioned, can we potentially do the UCL podcast on a Monday? I feel like there's so many things for the main pod I haven't mentioned today. And I'm not in any position to be commenting on UCL. I couldn't tell you what teams did it. I know Napoli won at Roma. I couldn't tell you any other result in Europe at the weekend. So that's why it is going to stay Tuesday mornings at the moment.
Cool. Patrons, stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, guys. Good luck. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.